During the 2010 Deepwater Horizon oil spill, two friends typed BP into Google. One saw investment opportunities and stock prices. The other saw environmental catastrophe and cleanup efforts. Between them lay 40 million different results. Not a technical glitch, but a deliberate design choice. This wasn't just about search engines anymore. It was about reality itself, splitting into personalized versions, each of us living in a custom-built information universe that feels complete but shows us only fragments. Google's December 2009 announcement of universal personalized search passed almost unnoticed, yet search expert Danny Sullivan recognized it as the biggest change that has ever happened in search engines. Today, 57 signals, from your location and device to your past clicks and connections, shape every result you see. This invisible architecture now extends far beyond Google, to nearly every corner of digital life, quietly constructing what we might call filter bubbles, personalized information ecosystems that fundamentally alter how we encounter ideas, people, and truth itself. The race to understand users began with competing visions. In the mid-1990s, Nicholas Negroponte imagined intelligent digital butlers creating personalized daily me experiences. Jaron Lanier immediately warned these agents would present cartoon versions of the world while serving divided loyalties between users and advertisers. Both predictions came true. Today's internet runs on invisible agents that grow smarter by accumulating behavioral data. Jeff Bezos pioneered profitable personalization at Amazon, tracking not just purchases, but how Kindle users read, which phrases they highlight, where they linger, when they stop. Meanwhile, Larry Page and Sergey Brin developed PageRank at Stanford, initially believing search should remain nonprofit and ad-free. But when their beta launched, traffic exploded. Google simply worked better than anything else, making commercialization irresistible. What they discovered wasn't just an algorithm, it was that relevance required knowing everything about everyone. Within hours of the FBI releasing the 9/11 hijackers' names, Axiom, a data broker operating from 5 acres of servers in Arkansas, knew more about 11 of the 19 perpetrators than the entire U.S. government. This company maintains profiles on 96% of American households, tracking roughly 1,500 data points per person. This hidden economy enables behavioral retargeting, where your online behavior becomes a commodity auctioned in milliseconds. Search for flights on Kayak, and a cookie tracks your interest. Kayak sells this data to brokers like BlueKai, who auction it to advertisers, explaining why products follow you across websites. Mobile location services extend this to physical spaces, letting stores recognize repeat customers through their phones. Companies like Rubicon Project claim databases covering over 500 million users, processing billions of real-time attributes yearly. At Microsoft's Social Graph Symposium, data executives revealed advertisers no longer need premium publishers to reach premium audiences. They can track those readers anywhere online. Publishers once received most advertising dollars. Now they get just 20 cents per dollar, with data brokers capturing the difference. News provides our shared understanding of problems, the foundation for democratic action. Walter Lippmann argued democracy requires a steady supply of trustworthy and relevant news to avoid incompetence, corruption, and ultimate disaster. Yet three forces are transforming this landscape. Media production costs approach zero, overwhelming choice creates attention crash, and since professional editors are expensive while code is cheap, we increasingly rely on algorithms rather than human judgment. The concept of public opinion emerged only in the mid-1700s, when politics expanded beyond palace walls. After World War I, Lippmann criticized newspapers as propaganda tools, advocating governance by expert insiders. John Dewey countered that journalists could cultivate citizenship by reminding people of their stake in society. Despite differences, both agreed newsmaking was fundamentally political and ethical, leading to objective journalism standards. But the 2000s promised disintermediation, eliminating middlemen, including editors. This narrative obscures a crucial truth. We simply replaced old gatekeepers with new ones. As law professor Tim Wu notes, the rise of networking did not eliminate intermediaries, but rather changed who they are. Adderall narrows focus at creativity's expense, increasing norepinephrine while reducing sensitivity to new stimuli. Personalized filters create similar effects, intense, narrow concentration that limits serendipitous discovery. Creativity requires collision of distant ideas, what Arthur Koestler called bisociation. The filter bubble artificially constrains our solution horizon, the mental space where we search for answers. Stephen Johnson argues creative environments rely on liquid networks, where diverse ideas collide unexpectedly. The early web was perfect for this, but personalization emphasizes convergent thinking over divergent exploration. For centuries, European maps depicted California as an island, partly because maps had no symbol for "don't know." Personalized filters create similar distortions. Traditional media provided representativeness. Even skipping articles, you'd notice headlines outside your interests. In the filter bubble, you don't glimpse what doesn't interest you. Mark Zuckerberg's belief that we each have one identity shapes Facebook's approach, creating self-fulfilling prophecies where the internet's distorted picture becomes who we really are. Personalization is evolving into sophisticated persuasion profiling that identifies which arguments influence you most effectively, potentially targeting you when you're most susceptible. Modern political marketing prioritizes loyalty over consensus. After George W. Bush's 2000 underperformance, Karl Rove pioneered micro-targeting, analyzing consumer data to predict voting behavior. Both parties now employ these methods, shifting focus from swing states to swing voters. The result? Campaigns intensely target persuadable voters while ignoring reliable partisans and the disengaged. Your personalized feeds reflect this calculus, bombarded with ads if you're persuadable, crickets if you're not. This fragmentation undermines public discourse. Campaigns micro-target demographics without accountability, making it nearly impossible for journalists to monitor claims or opponents to respond. Unlike broadcast-era ads that established common debate parameters, personalized politics splinters national conversation about our collective future. The economics are compelling as data collection costs plummet. Facial recognition exemplifies this. Police use $3,000 iPhone apps for real-time identification, while Facebook's deepfake matches human accuracy. Augmented reality moves mainstream, with DARPA research showing 500% increases in working memory through optimized information delivery. Architect Christopher Alexander's A Pattern Language contrasted thriving heterogeneous cities with failing cities of ghettos, proposing a mosaic of subcultures, distinct yet accessible neighborhoods where people find their communities while exploring others. This framework applies perfectly to the internet, where excessive personalization risks creating isolated information ghettos. We need digital urban planners, balancing relevance with serendipity. Most of us follow mouse-like patterns online, visiting the same sites repeatedly. By varying our paths and stretching interests in new directions, we give algorithms more breadth and enlarge our worldview. Companies should recognize public responsibilities through transparency, making filtering systems visible, letting users see who sites think they are, designing algorithms to disprove assumptions rather than reinforcing identity loops. Though services like Pandora and Google offer genuine benefits, what's troubling is this shift's invisibility and our resulting lack of control. As Tim Berners-Lee warns, successful platforms wall off information, potentially breaking the web into fragmented islands. We stand at a crossroads. The question isn't whether to use these technologies, but whether we'll demand the transparency, control, and shared spaces necessary to maintain our common humanity in an age of infinite customization.